Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
And welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on WVLP 103.1 FM and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. This is our weekly program covering arts and arts events in Valparaiso and throughout Northwest Indiana. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Our theme music you heard is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Underwriters for Art on the Air are Valparaiso University's Brower Museum, regional art patron Mary Levan, and our landlord, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments. If you'd like to find out more about leasing space in this historic building, please give Walt a call, 219-462-5821. I'd like to thank them for their generous support. Thanks to Greg Kovach, WVLP's station manager. Art in the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project grant through South Shore Arts and is part of the National Endowment for the Arts. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at artontheairwvlp@gmail.com. That's artontheairwvlp@gmail.com. Our program, along with all of our programs, are streaming live at wvlp.org. Art on the Air is rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m. Our entire show archive can be heard at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That's breck, BRECH.com/AOTA. You'll also find our detailed arts calendar at breck.com/AOTA. Our shows are carried by Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, every Sunday at 7 p.m., and you can hear them at lakeshorepublicradio.org. And make sure to like us on our Facebook page, Art on the Air, WVLP. Art on the Air is always looking for financial support. We'd like to thank our current supporters. If you're looking to support Art on the Air and, of course, the WVLP station, we'd be happy to become part of the WVLP family anytime. Esther and I especially would invite you to become an underwriter of this program in particular. We have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA. You can find out support information there or at wvlp.org/support. We have underwriter levels at various levels. You can support us. We'll mention you during our show and throughout the WVLP broadcast day. You know, we encourage you to become part of a supporter because we are supported by our listeners. So don't just be a WVLP and Art on the Air listener. Become a supporter or underwriter in whatever amount you're able to do so we continue to bring you great content and this great local programming. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. And you'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air and the whole WVLP family. Join the WVLP family today. And now on Art in the Air for our spotlight, we have Becky Jaskowiak. She's the president of the Northwest Indiana Excellence in Theater Foundation, also known as NIDIF. Welcome to Art in the Air.
Welcome. Thank you. Thanks.
So, Becky, we want to know, how is this current COVID-19 impacting not only NIDIF, but theaters in general in Northwest Indiana?
Theaters are definitely struggling. There were at least three shows that were in process, meaning they were either already performing and then had to close early or were right up to dress rehearsal night and then were about to open and then had to close. So, you know, even a couple of those theaters have the set still sitting on the stage ready to go when able to return. So most of our theaters, a vast majority of their income comes from ticket sales. And so without that, they're really, you know, struggling trying to figure out how to pay their rent and for those that do have staff, pay their staff. So it's definitely been a big challenge for our member theaters.
I know, it's really hard to envision what it's going to be. I mean, how are we going to do performance?
So I've been sitting in on a bunch of webinars and roundtable discussions and, you know, theater organizations across the country and arts organizations and listening to what they're doing and how they're revamping. And, you know, most people immediately think, well, just do stuff online, you know, that's what you see, like, the big places doing. But there's so many rights issues that happen with that. And it wasn't until just about a week or two ago that rights houses are finally coming around with shows that you can do online. So that was initially the first thing that people thought of. And then some places are doing open mics where people can just sing, or on Thursday nights, we're doing theater trivia. So you can join in online and do theater trivia on Thursday nights. So that's something. Our improv group has been doing kind of a takeoff of the old Hollywood Square called The Grid. And it translates really well to online. So they've, you know, they're using their creativity to envision what theater can look like online. Yeah.
You know, Becky, you brought up about rights. I would be concerned in knowing how rights work with theaters for my long time in that. If some of the groups, you know, they've already paid for the rights, royalties, and then can't perform, are they getting refunds, or do you know how that's working out?
So for most of them, they are just holding their funds and allowing them to either change their date, go forward, you know, if they're going to remount the show later on, or if they're canceling and they are going to do another show. Most of them are holding their funds and applying it to a future production. For, you know, for everybody who's dealing with trying not to give refunds as much as possible and just extending the benefit.
Especially Tams Whitmark. I know they like to hold on to the money.
Becky, yeah. Are there any good places to do outdoor theater?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, so we have a contract with the state park, NEDIF does, to perform on Thursday nights throughout the summer. And so we have approval to continue on with that program. It's going to start after mid-July and go through probably mid-September this year. Usually it runs more like Memorial Day to Labor Day, but, you know, we have to adjust a little bit. And then there's lots of parks. Gary Shakespeare Company goes around all over Northwest Indiana every summer and performs in parks and outdoor venues like that. We did just do a survey to patrons about what they would feel comfortable with as far as attending, and absolutely either virtual or outdoor is where they felt comfortable.
What's going on right now by Zoom, do you know, for anything that was in the works?
I do know that there are a couple companies. Most of them are shows that only have 2, 3, 4 people. So even when they are rehearsing in person, they can be pretty spread out. But there are, Gary Shakespeare is rehearsing via Zoom for their big Shakespeare show, yeah.
Becky, one question I have is, and it's prompted by an article by Charles McNulty, theater critic for Los Angeles Times. What do you see as the post-pandemic theater scene like in Northwest Indiana?
I think it gives theaters an opportunity to be creative. And, you know, you get so tied into what your venue is like. You know, if you're used to a huge auditorium or you're used to a black box, now, whether you're virtual or, you know, some theaters have talked about doing shows on different nights of the week so they can spread out audiences, and, you know, having Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday night, and, you know, nobody bats an eye at going to a Chicago show on the middle of the week, but for some reason, Northwest Indiana has only ever done weekends. So they're talking about that. They're talking about, you know, why not bring back theater that uses masks and just incorporate it into the performance? You know, it used to be that way. So I love that people are just being creative and expressing, coming together and being creative, and that's what theater is.
Okay, quick, got to just wrap up here. Becky, any final thoughts for us and our audience?
Please go to NEDIF.org and see what shows are coming up and what ways theater is still happening and will continue to happen across Northwest Indiana.
Thank you so much. That's Becky Wachowiak from the Northwest Excellence in Theater Foundation, NEDIF.org.
Thank you.
And now we're back with Art of the Air, and we have two great guests from down in Indianapolis. We have Louis Rickey, the executive director from the Indiana Arts Commission, and Kara Amstutz, from president and CEO of the Indiana Humanities. Welcome to Art on the Air, both of you.
Hello.
Thank you.
Well, we'll start with you, Louis. Tell us a little bit about your background and how you got to become executive director at the Indiana Arts Commission.
Well, that's kind of a long, circuitous route, but I have my master's degree from IU in arts management, and did an internship in Indianapolis violin competition, the International Violin Competition of Indianapolis. Actually worked for public broadcasting for a number of years at WFIU in Bloomington, and then was director of the Columbus Area Arts Council, left the state for a while, and then came back to take this job. So,
when was Columbus?
When was Columbus? I was there from 1991 to 1997 as director of the Columbus Area Arts Council.
Boy, Columbus is like a fabulous, I mean, what they've done with the arts is amazing.
Lewis, you must know Kathy Morris, the electric violinist from Columbus. I do.
And, you know, Columbus was the first time I was executive director of something, and it was a community that just taught me a lot about how communities plan together and work together, and it was kind of an exemplary situation to, you know, be the kid in and learn everything. So I think really highly of Columbus and the leadership there.
And before we go off of you, I guess you also have like a family band that does performs. Tell us just briefly about that.
Well, yeah, I'm a musician and my kids are musicians. And so we, you know, we have played out quite a lot together. I have a son who is a drummer and a mandolin player and a keyboardist, and another son who is a guitarist, singer. I'm a singer, piano player. My wife plays a little bass. And unfortunately, the band has sort of broken up a bit. The drummer has moved to Hawaii to be a school teacher in Hawaii. So it's a little tough to do the band at that distance. So
I guess you could do it by Zoom, but sounds great. Well, Kira, let's move on to you. Tell us about how you got from where you were to where you are now.
Well, thank you again for having me on. I'm really excited to chat with you all, and I appreciate the great work you're doing spreading the love of the arts in Northwest Indiana. So I am a lifelong Hoosier. I grew up in Steuben County and have spent most of my adult career in Indianapolis. One of the interesting, I think, twists and turns in my career path is that I spent the last I've spent the last 12 years at Indiana Humanities, but immediately before that, I had a really cool job. I was head of cultural development for the city of Indianapolis, and we had an amazing public-private partnership during that time to provide a significant investment in the cultural tourism area. We did a major series of public art programs, cultural districts, and an investment in communication and product development. So it was a lot of fun, great opportunity to serve the city, but I'm really excited that I've been able to serve the full state the last 12 years, especially being a small-town girl. So.
And a small-time girl that has a law degree. I saw that.
Yeah, that was the beginning of my career. It was wonderful and exciting, but I have to tell you, there's nothing like working in the arts and cultural sector.
Excellent.
I agree with that. So I'm always referencing Indianapolis to Michigan City because Indianapolis is such an artistic place to go in. Especially Mass Ave, even the crosswalks are a joy. and so I'm always referencing let's use this as the example of how we can really bring real-time art to anybody who's walking anywhere. So thank you so much.
Kira, let's continue with you. Tell us a little about what the Indiana Humanities does.
Well, you know, we consider ourselves kind of a sister organization to Lewis's group. So his focus is the art, particularly performing and visual art, but we are the humanities. So our work is in history, in cultural work, in literature. So we are a grant maker, and we do programs in the humanities statewide. So one of the things I know we'll chat a little bit about later is perhaps some of the organizations that we serve in your area. And, you know, our typical partners are libraries and museums and schools, and again, local history organizations. So, you know, we work in all 92 counties. Our shorthand version of our mission is we encourage Hoosiers to think, read, and talk. So, again, we view ourselves as a partner to Lewis and his arts work, but, you know, our goal is to enrich the lives of people in Indiana through the humanities and communities as well.
And just out of curiosity, you're broken up into regions, much like the Indiana Arts Commission, with kind of local control?
No, actually not.
Okay.
We don't have regions in that way. All of our grant making takes place just through Indiana Humanities directly.
Excellent.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
Well, Lewis, we'll move on to you, and I know much of our audience does know about the Indiana Arts Commission, but go ahead, for those that may not know, tell us exactly about what your mission is with the Indiana Arts Commission.
Well, sure. I mean, we are a state agency, so we're an executive agency under the Office of the Governor. So just like our state has, you know, a transportation department and health and other things, we are for the arts. So we are partnered to Kira. She's on the not-for-profit side of the world. I'm on the public side of the world. And we actually serve artists, and we serve organizations, either arts organizations or those that provide arts programming, as well as communities. So those are our three major constituent groups. And we do research and advocacy for each of those groups. We do capacity building, which is to help them be more successful. And then we do granting. We invest in them to produce public outcomes for our state that are valuable for all of our citizens. We're probably, like here, probably best known for our grant making in the state. But as you were saying, right, as we were starting, you tune into a lot of our webinars during this time, which is part of our capacity building, right, to help the field be successful even under these unusual conditions that we're in at the moment. We do have a regional system. South Shore Arts is our partner up in your neck of the woods. We have actually 11 regions around the state with local partners that help us do our grant making and service providing. We have a commission of 15 commissioners appointed by the governor, and they hire me, and I have a wonderful staff that develops our programs and services. So,
well, Lewis, we'll make sure to put...
You do have a wonderful staff. Everybody I've ever communicated with is just so professional and helpful. You're very lucky.
And, Lewis, we'll put in a good word to Libby Chu up here for you, too, so...
Right. I have a couple of wonderful commissioners up there, Libby Chu from Ogden Dunes and Dusty Stemmer from Chesterton are my two commissioners from up that way.
Very good. Yeah, I know Libby because we've been at arts events together. I've not met the other one. I do live in Chesterton, but yeah. Anyway, that sounds great. So we'll come back to Kira here for right now. With the COVID-19 event, this whole pandemic thing, how is that impacting your programs and what you are doing with the humanities?
Well, that's a terrific question. And I think like many of your listeners, it's impacting everything. I think when all of this started, we knew it was going to be a life-changing event, but I don't think we realized the extent to which we would have to, I think, retool all of our work. So I'll give you a couple of examples. The first one is we do most of our programs in person, connecting with others in, you know, spaces like, you know, again, museums or our office or, you know, in other locations around the state. We have pulled back from all of our in-person programming like everyone during this time. But we have, because we have such a creative team and such a dynamic group, we have been able to pivot. And we have been doing a robust series of digital programs. And we have continued all of our grant making without interruption through this process. So as organizations are continuing to dream and come up with new ways of serving the community, we can respond to that and we can be helpful. So that's been a big part of our pivot. One other thing that I know you were hoping that we would talk about is that both Lewis through the Arts Commission and Indiana Humanities through our federal partners did receive some funding through the CARES grant that we could distribute to in support, operational support of organizations that we both serve. And so we announced just this week that we distributed over $500,000 statewide. And there are a few local organizations that we have been able to give support to that I will just give shout-outs to right now, the Cedar Lake Historic Society, the Hobart Historical Society, Porter County Public Library, and the Crown Point Community Library, just to name a couple.
Excellent. Yeah, that's important, the CARES Act. I know I'm a board chair for Lakeshore Public Media, which is radio and television up here, and we received some wonderful payroll adjustments and everything to keep us going because we're kind of a small operation. So I'll come back to you, Lewis, the same question. How are you, how's the Indiana Arts Commission dealing with the pandemic?
Well, Danny, of the same ways, you know, I think as strong as we have been in the capacity building realm, and a lot of that was in-person things. You probably are familiar with the Indiana Arts Homecoming, which is our sort of our flagship capacity building event every year for the field, and did many other in-person seminars in public art and art entrepreneurship and many other things. We have moved all of that online. So we have done now a series of webinars over the last couple of months, about a dozen webinars, and had well over attendance of well over 2,000 cumulatively with those webinars, with, you know, an average attendance of a couple hundred people for each of our webinars. And they've been on topics including fundraising, board development, entrepreneurship, intellectual property rights as people move artistic product online, community relevance, just a variety of topics. And as well as CARE, we partnered with the National Endowment for the Arts to distribute CARES funds in our state. We actually had a number of sources of a funds which we put an emergency relief fund together, which included CARES funds directly from the NEA, CARES funds from the NEA through Arts Midwest, which is our regional partner here in the Midwest for 9 states that are partners with the NEA, and then some other funds from the Arts Commission. And we have just awarded almost $600,000 of funds throughout the state. Those organizations that were receiving operational grants from us were eligible to receive a $3,000 emergency relief fund amount. There were some 199 organizations that qualified throughout the state of Indiana, and 195 of them decided to accept the funds. Not surprisingly, almost all of them. Some of the organizations in your region included the Community Theater Guild, Chicago Street Theater, Memorial Opera House, the Chesterton Arts Center, the Art Barnes School of the Arts. So we're glad that there are a number of organizations in your area. That's just a sampling of some of the ones in Porter County where you guys are. So,
is it mostly just nonprofits then that the funding is for? Our organizations that are under that category?
Correct. So our partner, the National Endowment for the Arts, wanted us to provide it for not-for-profit arts organizations for general operating types of support, for operational support. So we already had this large group of organizations that we that apply to us on an annual basis. So in 2020, we had already paneled in a open process those opportunities, and 199 organizations were already receiving operational funds from us. So these CARES Act funds augment that and make it available for them to have some additional support and some specific relief during this time.
Lewis, we've interviewed some of the grantees, and there is a little bit of concern, but maybe you can speak to that. They're not able to fulfill parts of their grants, which especially like performance and things. So tell us how they should address that.
So, you know, we do have our regional arts partnership, and so we have a way to connect with organizations on a more kind of individual level and do some coaching and mentoring and work through some of those issues. So we are simply working through all of our grantees in the state so they can modify, if they were, for instance, a project grant, they could modify the project to go into a virtual space rather than a physical space, or perhaps change the timing of it or the substance of it in order to allow it to still have public value, as well as our organizational grantees where we give money for general operations. We simply want them to document to us how they're changing their operations during this time and remaining relevant in their service to their communities. So, for instance, we have a lot of, I have a list of project grantees that we're working with at the moment, all in Porter County. And I thought I'd give you that list as well. But All About Art Incorporated, Boys and Girls Club of Greater Northwest Indiana, Ballet Folklorico of Northwest Indiana, Discovery Charter School, Duneland Chamber of Commerce, Dua Sequenza, Frontline Foundations, Indiana Dunes, Opportunity Enterprises, South Shore Brass Band, South Shore Chamber Orchestra, Duneland Family YMCA, Valpo Creative Council, and Valpo Theatrical Company. As you can see, some of these are arts organizations, and some of them are other types of community organizations that do arts projects. But we are working with every grantee to make sure that they can, you know, have those funds and they can still produce good things for their communities.
Lewis, just by way of disclosure, both Esther and I have served on grant commissions. In fact, I moderated the last one by Zoom. So we're familiar with many of those organizations. And Chester Arts, and I'm also a board member along with a few others. So we'll go over to...
I should also say that Neighbors Broadcasting and WBLP is also a project grant recipient of ours. So,
and that's what keeps art on the air on the air. That's, and we've expanded our coverage because now the station itself only covers like Valparaiso Central, Porter County. But with us being on Lakeshore Public Radio, we now really can serve the three county area in a much broader way. Over to you, Kara. Some of the same things. How are you dealing with individual grantees and their response to that? It's maybe a little different for the humanities, but tell us about that.
Well, you know, I think the key right now is to help support the sustainability of the organizations that are within our umbrella and to provide as much flexibility as possible. So like Lewis, we have been on the phone and on email with all of our grantees, making sure they know that we completely appreciate the situation that they're in. And I think what I would love to just spend a minute talking about, too, is the need that we're seeing out there, because I think it's really important for the community to know how devastating the COVID crisis has been on the cultural sector. There are lots of people out of work. There are a lot of fundraisers that aren't happening. There are a lot of programs that aren't happening, people not being served, and there is real, genuine, tangible, palpable need. And we are doing everything, again, we can to be supportive. And luckily, we have the ability to be very flexible, whether it's postponing an event or helping an organizer recalibrate an event in a different kind of format that will work today. We are doing all of those things. But I did want to give you a couple of numbers, because this was, this just took the air out of my, you know, lungs when I saw it. So for the applications we received for the CARES funding we had, and remember, we had about $500,000 to distribute, we got 186 applications statewide. And those organizations told us that to date, they have lost $11.7 million. And we asked them to project out through September what they thought their losses might look like. And the losses projected are $44.9 million. So although I'm so grateful we've been able to provide some immediate stability to these organizations in need, the need is way bigger than we can fill. So I think it's really important for folks out there to realize your arts and cultural organizations need you too. I know fundraising right now for a lot of organizations is really focused on immediate human needs and sustainability, but the arts and cultural sector has really taken a hit.
So let's look ahead for a little bit, both of you, and I'll take this back to Lewis. When we get through the pandemic, which we don't know exactly how long it is, maybe in the future, how do you see if this changing how things are going to be run, if at all?
Well, I mean, that's an excellent question. And I know that right now, every arts organization is and is trying to articulate a reopening plan. Now, of course, those reopening plans are framed by national, state, and local directives about reopening. So from you know, the White House, from the governor's office, and from local mayors or county offices, those parameters are being set for people. There's also a lot of information that is beginning to flow to arts organizations, not only in Indiana, around the country, from national organizations that embody best practices for individual disciplines. So that might be for musicians, or for actors, or for dancers, for performing artists, etc., with best practices as far as a safe and responsible opening, both for artists as well as for patrons and audience members and for facilities and venues. So it's pretty complicated, actually, and the arts offer some pretty unique challenges as far as operating as they have always operated. And it's going to require some creative problem solving on the parts of our organizations to adapt what they do to the new realities and still make it both mission driven and service oriented to their constituents, as well as financially viable and doable for them. So we're in some really challenging time, as Kara said, for our organization. And again, we are also playing the role of helping them sort through those things and find a path forward. So that capacity building aspect of what we do as an organization, education, dissemination of information, becomes all the more critical during a time like this, because it will be up ultimately up to them to figure out how to do it. But we can do some coaching. We can provide good and accurate information. We can provide wisdom from national sources, best practices, that sort of thing, to help guide their decision-making process.
Kara, to you, we have about a minute left. How about the same thing?
I will just jump in and say that I have been on lots of the same calls that Lewis has been with our community, and although they have a lot of questions, there's a lot of confusion, there's so much creativity, there's so much passion, there's so much hope, and I think for our community to heal from this crisis, and we need the cultural sector. We need our artists. We need our humanists. We need, you know, all the vibrancy that this brings to a community for us to heal. So Lewis and I will continue to do everything we can to provide that support, but I'm optimistic that our creative friends will find new ways to serve the community, and perhaps even some new, better ways to serve.
Very good. Well, I think we'll have to wrap it up there. We really appreciate you coming on Art in the Air, telling us that. You've been listening to Lewis Rickey from the Indiana Arts Commission and Kara Amstutz from Indiana Humanities. We appreciate you being on Art in the Air and sharing what's going on during the pandemic.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
And now we'd like to welcome to Art on the Air Mike Owens. He's an American roots musician, plays several instruments, known primarily for playing the harmonica, slide guitar, and so forth. He's from Southern Missouri. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Aloha, Mike.
We'd like to ask you, Mike, tell us a little bit about your personal story, like where you grew up and how you got from where you were to where you are now.
Well, originally I'm from Missouri, South Missouri, actually, and I lived quite a few places in my adolescent years. My father was in the military and then later was a engineer and patent agent and such. And we lived in a few states, but then I spent several years in St. Louis and a few other places, and then moved to Chicago eventually, or actually Indiana, but the area, when I was working for a railroad, and ended up doing railroad work for quite a while. I worked a whole lot of different kinds of occupations over the years. Worked in meatpacking plants, and did greenhouse and truck patch work as a young man, and worked washing pots and pans, and worked on a farm and in factories and all kinds of things. Anyway, I wound up here because of the railroad, and I played guitar that whole time and a couple other instruments with maybe a little less proficiency. But
when you were in the Army, did you play guitar during that time?
I did. I had a beater guitar that I bought for, I don't know, a couple of dollars. I had a guitar at home, but I didn't bring it with me. So then I ended up buying one, really cheap, and I drug it around and beat on it, while I was in the service. Yeah. Even in Vietnam, I was carrying it around with me in Vietnam. So,
I'd like to say, first of all, thank you for your service in Vietnam. Whereabouts did you serve in Vietnam, and what service?
I was in the Army, and I actually covered a big part of it because I started out down in the south, near Saigon at a base they called Long Bin, but they called me up and said they were shipping me north, so I went up to Cameron Bay, which is about halfway up, and then I wasn't there hardly any time, and they were moving you to a special outfit in Da Nang, which is getting closer to where the DMZ was. And I spent the majority of my time up in the north part near Da Nang, near the large Marine Corps base there. And I was in a unit that had, I was in an Army unit, but the assignments we had were mixed. They do a lot more of that today, I think, than they did back then, they would have several forces working together on a particular mission or whatever. So we had Marine dogs and stuff like that with us.
Excellent. Anyway. Tell us a little bit about your music today, and we'll also talk a little bit about your art, but tell us the roots of your music, exactly what it fits. I know it's generally called Americana roots, but describe that to our audience who may not know what Americana roots is.
Well, Americana, I'd say, is kind of a more recent term, maybe 10 or 15 years ago, probably, they started using it. But it takes into account more of the, a little less on the electric side, but a little more of the roots music that is particularly American. So I would say the blues music, the mountain music, that Appalachian style, Ozark, mountain style, and some of the more, less fancy types of country music, the less, maybe not as, polished or not as produced. You would expect to see at a folk music festival
or on the back porch, right?
People on the back porch, right? I was really going to say that, Esther. So
yeah.
Thank you, but yeah. And we did a lot of that. I mean, just playing in on evenings like it'll probably be tonight, where it's going to be maybe 80 degrees or something in the evening. You're out on the porch with a couple people and some guitars and maybe a mandolin and some beverages and not really even singing to much of an audience, just the group of folks that were there. So
those are my favorite experiences.
Yeah, you get a lot of that around the bluegrass festivals and such, where aside from the main stage, there'll be a lot of people will just bunch up, you know, out in the parking lot or, you know, nearby and just play with each other, and they're not even part of the main show, you know. That's pretty common. And
so what instruments are you focusing on now? In the beginning I said a few, but what are you your primary instruments you use for your Americana music?
Mainly I use guitars and a mandolin and a harmonica. And the majority of my guitar work, as far as playing with anybody, I usually use what they call resonators. Some people call them dobros. Guitars, minor, I have, I don't know, about six of them, and they're steel, they're brass, they're wood, but they're a little different kind of an instrument. They're still basically a guitar though. And, But I have a few old wooden guitars, two regular Guild type guitars that I use. And then a lot of times I use a harp in a rack. That's a thing that holds it up for you so you can play the guitar at the same time. And then I occasionally, if somebody else is doing all the guitar work, then I might break out the mandolin and fill in some holes with the mandolin. So that's the most fun.
Sometimes jingles on your ankle.
Yes, oh yeah, I do. I started getting in a few years back. I started getting into the where a lot of the solo roots players provided their own percussion by foot stomping. I started doing that, not even consciously. I was doing it, and then somebody commented on it, and I realized I was actually pounding on the floor with my boots. And so I started adding on that. I'd take I have a couple of tambourines, and one has a notch cut out of it. It's just kind of a different way to hold it. So I was able to strap that to my boot, and then I also have a few other jingles that are on a Velcro strip I put around my boot. And so then when I stomp, it adds a little extra jingle, as you say.
Yeah, I'd like to actually have our audience listen to some music, and I'm going to set it up. We like to listen to Ozark Road. Tell us a little about the inspiration behind that song before we play it and instruments and things like that.
Well, I was writing different, as long as I can remember, I've tried to do some songwriting, and I would write different songs about, people or whatever. And then, one day, my lovely wife just said, why don't you write a song about, where you're from or your background? So, I thought about that for a little bit, and, this song basically, is what came out of that. And, it's called Ozark Road, and it's just basically about a guy, that's caught up in making a living and everything, and thinking back about those more basic roots, a simpler life, I guess, living in the country and all that, and playing on the front porch with a girl in the swing or whatever, and those kinds of memories, and that's kind of what it was. So
it's a brilliant song, Mike. I just love it so much.
Well, thank you so much.
Well, why don't we just take a listen to it? Here is Mike Owens on Ozark Road.
I'm running through the airport, gripping my hand. Much I gotta learn before I land. I gotta be in D.C. by the morning light. I'm riding on a red-eye late tonight, and there's people and paper, numbers to crunch. Another meeting, then no time for lunch. But if just for a second the pace is slow and my mind drifts off somewhere down on Ozark Road. Down on Ozark Road. Down on Ozark Road, a coon dog's barking at a croaking toad, and a young boy plays guitar tonight, while a pretty girl swinging in the front porch light. Sunday morning, church bells ring, chicken fries, and the choir girls sing, and the flags are popping, but the wind ain't cold. My beat-up truck still rolling down on Ozark Road. Ozark Road. I get so tired of office walls, those faxes and letters and telephone calls, and I've heard every single old tired cliche about the powers that be in the end of the day. But I know, no matter how I feel the need, I got bills to pay, I got mouths to feed, and I know this thing on the day I die, when I roll back my head and look up to the sky, I'll know that somewhere on an Ozark Road, Dr. Parker had a cooking toad, and a young boy to play guitar tonight, while a pretty girl singing in the front porch light. Sunday morning, church bells ring, chicken fries, and a choir girl sing, and the flags are popping, the wind ain't cold, and some kids beat up truck is rolling. kind of knows our roots. Out of whippoorwills, hoot owls, and crickets at night. Catfish, trout, and big bass bite. Kitchen is hot from what grandma's making. Blackberry cobbler, biscuits bacon, and a camouflage boat's floating down the river. A painted turkey honey pulls an arrow from his quiver, and the daredevils play on the radio. Lovers in the lane are steaming up the car. Ozark Road, a coon dog barking at a cocaine toad, and a young boy who play guitar tonight, while the pretty girl dances in the footboard's light. Sunday morning, church bells ring, those chicken fries, and a fire girl sing. The bottom, but the wind ain't cold, a beat up truck rolling down the Ozark Road. Down the Ozark Road. Somewhere, yeah, somewhere.
Mike Owens doing Ozark Road.
It's a fine song, Mike.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM.
So most of our listeners probably don't, well, the ones that know Mike know this, but Mike not only brings a variety of guitars when he's performing, but he also brings a sketchbook and does his 10-minute sketches or drawings of whoever is performing. So, Mike, what are you 10-minute sketching these days?
It's still the same. I like to go particularly to open mics where people are only going to be playing for a limited time, you know, 10, I call them 10 because they're playing for 10 to 15 minutes. And I like to do the musicians and the poets and the comedians or whatever they have. And that forces me to try to capture a likeness and just, you know, a short time, and because of that, because I don't have much time, I'm not able to really fret over a particular line. I just got to move with some fluidity, and then I like it's my way of recognizing the people that get out and perform too, because I generally, if I think it's any good, I'll contact or talk to the person I sketched and give them a copy of it or ask them if I can post it online, things like that. So they get a little recognition that way. It's not much, but it's what I can offer. You know,
yeah, but so. What are you doing now that we're not having public performances? Are you still sketching?
I see. No, I've been, of that, I've been doing less sketching and more painting, actually larger paintings.
So the paintings I've seen that you've done, they seem to have more of a psychological or surreal aspect. Is that, would you consider that your style, or was that just the paintings that I saw?
I never thought of it that way. I'm mainly focused on doing, the majority of the time, is doing, kind of like my music, I'm doing paintings of people. I don't really do, like, landscapes or whatever. They're mostly some style of a portraiture or something, and they're... I don't really want them to be just like a photographic portrait where you're just sitting there square faced at the camera. So I try to have a painting where the person is. Although I've done some like that, but I try to focus on the person doing a little bit of something.
The ones that you showed me were from the Wanderlust exhibit.
Those are kind of dictated by, you know, like those types of exhibitions are where there's a theme. So I was trying to come up with a theme there, but one of those is a little girl looking out a window, mm-hmm. and that was a girl that's in my family, and I've doing three now that are basically done, but for a show that got it's another South Lake Artists co-op show for bees, about bees. But mine aren't paintings of bees. They're actually people that are involved with bees, so like beekeepers and such. So
was that because I noticed on your Facebook page you were gessoing up like multiple canvases. So was that project or?
Yes, that part of that was, yeah. Part of it was because I don't want to do that right before I do a painting. I don't want them to already be ready. So, but yeah, three of those were for that. They were about 24 by 30 something, probably canvases size 24 by 30 inch or something like that.
So what's your next? Do you have your next one plotted out yet?
I'm close. Yeah, it's gonna be more people. I've got one portrait that's not for a show that I want to do. Of somebody I know, kind of, in a work environment. He's a railroad guy. A little bit of the blood and sweat, you know, of the work I wanted to show. So.
Yeah. Well, speaking of railroads, maybe that would be a good time to listen to Highway.
So why don't go ahead and listen to The Highway.
Thank you. reflection they show, I stand alone. Yeah, my shadow and my reflection, they show I stand alone. That old lonesome highway, it's calling me to roam. And I don't need a shot of whiskey, I don't need a drink of wine. I need a strong hearted woman that'll let me rain and shine. And every night I hear the highway and it's calling out my name.
And that's Mike Owens and The Highway. Hey, Mike, tell us about your website and where they can see your artwork and music.
Well, I have a website. It's called MikeOwensArt.com, and it's an art and music website. I'm loading some of my paintings and drawings up on it now. And then I also have a Facebook music page. It's called Ozark Road Music and Art at Facebook. So both those sites have videos of my music and sketches and drawings and such.
Oh, Mike, we'd like to thank you for being on Art in the Air, American Roots musician, and appreciate you coming on the show.
Thanks, Mike.
And thanks for having me.
And we'd like to thank our guests today for being on Art in the Air, which is heard every Friday at 11 a.m., rebroadcast Monday at 5 p.m., and Sunday at 7 p.m., on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. Your hosts are Larry Breckner and Esther Golden. Thanks again to Greg Kovach, WVLP's station manager. Underwriters for Art in the Air are Valparaiso University's Brower Museum and Walt Brenninger of Paragon Investments. Also, Mary Levan is our art patron supporter. Art in the Air is supported by the Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant and the National Endowment for the Arts. If you're interested in being a guest or send us information about your arts-related event, exhibit, please email us at artontheairwvlp@gmail.com. That's artontheairwvlp@gmail.com. See you right here next week, 103.1 FM and 89.1 FM, Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know. Esther and Larry, Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air, our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show.